A day of pomp and controversy in the Houses of Parliament as the UK's monarch delivers the so-called Queen's Speech. It was the highlight of a day of elaborate pageantry in Westminster, where Her Majesty gave details of more than 20 bills the government wants to enact in the coming year. But with Britain's politics in turmoil and Brexit still unresolved, many of these bills may never come to pass.
South African Airways is in talks with potential partners as it seeks outside investment. That's according to President Cyril Ramaphosa speaking at the Financial Times Africa conference in London on Monday. Just last month, the embattled state-owned airline said a government cash injection of $372 million had been approved for the 2019-2020 financial year, but it says it still needs more money.
U.S.-based economist Esther Duflo made history on Monday when she became the second female winner of the Nobel Economics Prize and the youngest at 46 years old. She won it with her husband and fellow MIT colleague Abhijit Banerjee, as well as Harvard University researcher Michael Kremer for their work on fighting poverty. The trio's work focuses on how poverty can be tackled by breaking it down into smaller and more precise questions. The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences, which awards the prize, said their work ranged from helping millions of school children to helping governments increase funding for preventative medicine.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. It is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN. Steve Grzanich has the day off. I'm Don Kleppen. We got a good show for you coming up today. In just a moment, we're going to talk with Gene Kideau, who is the chair of the FCC Incentive Auction Task Force. There's going to be a approximately 1,000 TV stations around the country changing frequencies. It's a move happening in order to make room over the airwaves for more high-speed internet services. So we're going to talk with Gene about that in just a moment. And then later on, we're going to speak with Ariana Gibson, head of Driver Insight at ClearCover. ClearCover just ran a survey on drivers about what they like and what they don't like about the modern car insurance experience, so stay tuned for that. But momentarily up front here, I wanted to mention that I saw something yesterday. Chick-fil-A makes more per restaurant than McDonald's, Starbucks, and Subway combined. And that is something that I personally, as a fast food, you know, eater, I would not have assumed that if you asked me what the most profitable fast food chains are. I would have guessed McDonald's, and it does make the most of all fast food during the year. Every, you know, in terms of the business and bottom line profits overall, it's McDonald's, Starbucks, and Subway. Those are the top three. However, Chick-fil-A per unit makes more than all of those combined, and that has to do with higher prices per items. But one of the most impressive things is that Chick-fil-A, as anyone who has been there knows, is closed on Sundays, whereas McDonald's, Subway, Starbucks all open most of the way, 7 days a week. And I think it's telling that one chain, which has restrictions like being closed on Sundays, like sort of taking stances that are not in the best interest of the bottom line, I think that has seemed to benefit Chick-fil-A. People are more loyal to that in a way, or seeming to respect its choices that don't necessarily reflect the interest of a CEO or shareholders. And I think that's a trend that we may see going forward, especially in light of the CEOs of some of the top 100 companies around the world this summer signing a letter that profits for their shareholders is no longer the top priority for companies around the world. So that was something I found interesting just the other day. So I want to bring in now, as I mentioned, the chair of the FCC Incentive Auction Task Force, because of the changes that we can expect if you use over-the-air antennas for your local TV channels. This is going to be a change. You might have to rescan here. And in order to tell us and guide us through this, Gene Kideau of the FCC Incentive Auction Task Force. Good morning. Thanks for joining The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Don. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So I wanted to ask, what is the reason really up front? What are some of the high speed internet services? Why would people have to rescan their set top boxes for local channels?
Well, as you indicated before, we are trying to make some room for new mobile broadband high speed internet wireless services and 5G services. One of the things that we do at the FCC is try to make sure that we use our nation's airwaves as efficiently and effectively as we can for American consumers and businesses. And we identified the television spectrum as an area that we could use more efficiently, still get the same TV broadcasting, but be able to free up some space for new 5G and other wireless services. And that's what's going on here. And what that means is that TV stations, including a number in Chicago this week, are going to be changing their frequencies, not the channels that viewers watch, but the frequencies that they broadcast for over-the-air TV. Now, this is just TV that viewers receive with an antenna, not cable and satellite, but viewers with an antenna are going to need to rescan their TVs.
Right, right, gotcha. And that is, the rescan functionally just takes care of those changes in frequencies so that in terms of an experience, you know, when you're watching on your couch, you won't notice a change after you've rescanned because the channels you're watching are still the same, right?
That's exactly right. The change happens behind the scenes in the TV. It's what every viewer who uses an antenna did when they set up their TV for the first time. They needed to scan it to get all their local Chicagoland stations. And essentially what they need to do is teach the TV that the stations are now on a new frequency. And it takes 4 or 5 minutes, but after that they'll still see the same channels on the same TVs.
Gotcha. Right, right. So 5 minutes, no big deal. I did mention, or I did see in the article mentioned, that some of these frequencies are going to be changed at different times. So there may be a need for multiple rescans of the boxes. Is that right?
That's right. It's happening in phases, 10 phases. In many markets, there are a couple of different times that viewers will need to be on the lookout. They should have been seeing in Chicago for the past 30 days or so notices on their TV stations, the ones that are moving, that this is going to be happening and when they'll need to rescan.
Gotcha. Perfect. So that's when they would need to rescan again is something that would be a message to them over the channels via public service announcement or something. So basically just by watching the channels, they'll know or they should know when to rescan the boxes, yeah?
Right, and in case they miss those notices, which sometimes happens, probably a good rule of thumb for them is that if they notice that a channel that they're used to seeing via their over-the-air antenna seems to have gone missing, probably the first thing they should try is to rescan the TV, and perhaps that's what's the problem, and that'll get it right back.
For sure. I was curious what some of the new high-speed internet services, is that 5G? Is that even future stuff? What's the plan for this for the new space?
Well, that's up to the carriers who have purchased the spectrum. We had an auction, and a number of carriers bought the spectrum that we're freeing up, and they are going to be using it for capacity in their networks. American consumers seemingly have an insatiable demand for faster and faster speeds and more capacity, so that's going to be going there. And in addition, the 5G services that are rolling out are going to be using this spectrum as well. I think one carrier already has started doing that.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I was wondering, in that regard, as you mentioned, there is an insatiable appetite for faster and quick, you know, better click and get now. So I'm wondering, does that indicate that this sort of thing might happen again? I mean, we're looking at 5G now, let's say 5, 10 years, 6G, more rescans of local set-top boxes?
We don't have any plan right now for any further reorganization of the TV band, but there are other bands that we're looking at that are used for other services that we're looking to make more efficient. So, yes, we are continually on the hunt for new spectrum or spectrum that we can use for services that demand requires.
Gotcha. Okay. That it also made me wonder this, I mean, everyone likes turning on the local TV channels to see various things, local programs and news, and just seeing what's going on in the neighborhood. Does this sort of upgrading, and as these do were to continue in the future, and as we do continue to get new tech and new capabilities and need more bandwidth over the air, I would suppose, does this indicate maybe that one day local TV or antennas, at least as a provider or a way of getting those frequencies, do you think they might become obsolete at some point in the future?
Well, that's actually interesting. I think that antenna usage is actually on the rise, is what I've been hearing. You've heard about the phenomenon called cord cutting.
Right.
And as you said before, it's important for viewers to be able to get local news and emergency weather and other emergency alerts. And so if you just stream your entertainment over the Internet, you're not necessarily going to get any of that. So viewers are starting to realize that free over-the-air TV still exists, and that they can get that new, or they can get local news and other local programming for free with a fairly inexpensive antenna. So I think it's actually on the increase as opposed to disappearing.
That is very interesting, and it does make sense when you put it that way. I mean, it's local content and alerts like that are obviously top of mind and most important, I think, to people viewing local channels. Gene, that you guys had an auction at the FCC for the space that's going to be opening up with these change in frequencies. How many, I'm just curious, how many bidders around were there for the space?
We had dozens of bidders for the space. We raised about over $19 billion for the spectrum that we sold, 7.3 of which has gone back to the U.S. Treasury for deficit reduction. So it's very valuable spectrum that carriers very much needed and wanted, and a lot of them bid on it.
That's great. I was also curious. I was just trying to read up a little bit on the FCC Incentive Auction Task Force, and I'm curious: is this, what other functions does this task force fulfill? Are there other, obviously it's implied other auctions are held by the task force as well, right?
Well, there are other auctions that are held in other task forces for specific purposes. My group was set up entirely for this broadcast auction. It's something that took about 6 years to plan. The auction itself took a year to do because we had to be buying spectrum from TV stations and selling it to wireless carriers. So it was a complicated thing, and now we are in a 3-year post-auction transition in which we're moving all the stations around to clear the spectrum that we sold. So I'm very much focused on that right now, but the FCC in general is focused on a number of different auctions that are in the pipeline starting very soon.
Right. Interesting. As we mentioned, anyone who's interested in rescanning their set-top boxes for these changing frequencies, you should see a public service announcement come across the screen letting you know when it would be a good time to rescan. May have to do it more than once. But is there, in case, let's say, someone's coming in, you know, if they're out of their house for a week or something and they come back and then they have some rescans that they need to do, is there a place that they could go online or a number they could call in order to see a list of the channels?
Yeah, oh yes, we have a lot of information on our FCC website. So the first place they might try is www.fcc.gov/TV rescan. It tells you a little bit about the auction and what's happening and how to rescan. And for viewers who need a little extra help with managing the remote control functions and those kinds of things, we also have a call center that we've set up specifically for this purpose. It's open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. So during prime time or on weekends, if a viewer needs help, we have some help at 1-888-CALL-FCC. That's 1-888-225-5322.
Gene Kidu, chair of the FCC Incentive Auction Task Force, thank you so much for joining the Opening Bell this morning. We really appreciate the information.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for helping to get the word out to Chicago viewers.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
This is the Opening Bell on 720 WGN. Steve Grzanich has the day off. I'm Don Kleppen in for him. Car insurance. What do you think? Sexy? Fun? Not exactly. But good and bad, it's part of life. And ClearCover, which is a newer car insurance choice, they just ran a survey on what consumers like and dislike about their experiences with car insurance. There's lots of apps, there's internet now, a lot of new services available, and different companies taking advantages in different ways. So we wanted to bring on the head of driver insight at ClearCover, Ariana Gibson. Good morning, Ariana.
Good morning, Don. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us. So Clear Cover. Smarter choice for car insurance, I see, on the bio here for the company. I wanted to know, what was sort of top of mind when you conducted the survey? What were the things that you really wanted to know at Clear Cover?
I think that, it sort of goes back to how we started the company with this idea of creating an insurance company that's what customers actually want. And so we often talk about, you can only remain the company that provides that and delivers on that promise if you continue to ask people what it is that they want. So sometimes with these types of surveys, you get a little surprised because you have ideas in your mind of what you think you know, and then you need a high volume of people to give you input to kind of help you see trends. And so I don't know that we went in trying to prove one thing or another. It was still sort of that, how do we understand the motivations of the human beings that we are servicing, not just thinking of them as insurance customers or drivers, but as human beings, and help build for them what it is that they want.
Absolutely. All right. So one of the things here that I think of when I think of car insurance and the whole process of selecting a provider and your package and stuff is, brand recognition. We think of big names of insurance providers, and usually there's some kind of snapshot follow up as in terms of what they offer. You think of like a Geico with their, saving money, and State Farm, been there, done that kind of a thing. What is it about brand recognition, and does it inspire loyalty among customers? Does it mean anything to them?
I think that's one of the most interesting parts of insurance. There's a lot of money spent to build awareness. And so when we did the survey, on average, people could name more than 5 car insurance companies, which is great because it means that a lot of names are known. 76% of the respondents said that they couldn't tell anyone a difference between those companies. So on the one hand, it seems sometimes that the recognition only goes so far as the name, which, of course, isn't great. But I also think that, loyalty is different. There are a high number of people who feel like they would switch car insurance providers. In fact, 87% of people said they would if the price was good and the policies were easy to understand. So what we see happening is that there is a very high brand recognition in car insurance, not so much brand loyalty, unfortunately.
Right, absolutely. The brand awareness that you mentioned too, because someone's aware of, what the names of the company is or sort of what maybe their ad campaign is, it doesn't really translate into what services that company might offer, right?
Exactly. And I think, for the most part, one of the things that we've learned, and it's been pretty consistent over time, is that people really just want to save money on car insurance. And so as the market maybe gets flooded with language talking to you about how much money you can save, I think it's even more important to put messaging out there and have conversations with customers that helps them understand on a deeper level the benefits that you bring to their life beyond saving money, because that's, starting to become table stakes in the industry.
Right, absolutely. I think there's no question that with the digital capabilities, you got apps, websites are a lot more intuitive, I think, now. And it follows, I think, in the minds certainly of like myself and consumers, that as those services and as the ease of technology and 24/7 accessibility grows, it makes sense that there would be more services offered, things would be easier, a little maybe more clear-cut, simplified. I would imagine most consumers want digital accessibility and sort of like, modern solutions to problems, right?
Yep, and I think that, the industry is taking note, and every company is doing a lot to work on the technology they provide and making things easier. But I think maybe one of the most interesting points that came from the survey was this understanding. I think to the first question that you asked, we sort of assumed that the majority of people would say, like, I'd love to do this digitally. That seems to be the way the world is going in general in a lot of industries. But 90% of the people we surveyed said they actually would prefer an insurance company that offers a hybrid of both self-service technology and human touch when they want it.
Right, absolutely. I think we all enjoy the ability to keep the headphones in and go to the self-checkout kiosk at the grocery store to just speed things along if you're in that mood. But sometimes with car insurance or more complicated things, I think you'd at points want somebody who's available to explain things to you, right?
Yeah, and I love how you say at points, because I think, we talk a lot too about how it's important not to think of some people want human interaction and some people want technology. We really believe that it exists on a spectrum and that the spectrum is different for every person. So, the majority of our customers purchase policies without any human assistance. So 80% of our policies are sold without talking to a human being. But there are other people, and it varies by age and location in the country and a number of different factors. But some people say, no, I want to do all of the shopping and understanding prices digitally. But then when I'm ready to give over my credit card information or really, sign up and make the switch, I want to hear the voice of someone on the other end of the phone who, makes me feel confident in my choice. That's the minority, but when we flip it to things like having a claim, where things can get incredibly complicated, can get incredibly emotional, that's an area where we see a lot of people wanting more human interaction, and I think one of the ways that we've been able to build loyalty is really making sure that we get that part right, really making sure that we are making people feel heard, that we're available to them when they're going through something that might be a little bit scary.
Right, absolutely. I think that's sort of the backdrop or the bottom line of an insurance company is that, it's payments that people make, but it's for safety or it's for a catch-all in case something disastrous happens. And when that if and when it does, I think it's really helpful to have a human voice there or somebody to kind of even just reassure you on the other end of a phone line.
Exactly. And, it's that's a more interesting one because that's almost split 50-50 for us in terms of people submitting claims through the app. So one of the features of our app is that you can do digital claims. So you can open your app, you can take photos of the damage that was done to a car, and you know that immediately you're filing the claim. And I think, we also have to think about the difference in accidents. They can be minor fender benders that are sort of a distraction on your way to work that you have to take care of. And in those moments, people really appreciate that we make things digital and so fast and convenient. But as sort of the situation changes, people are more interested in having a conversation, and we're really happy to be there for them to let them know that, we're both a people and a technology company.
Right, absolutely. They're kind of covered in both areas there, which is nice. I'm wondering, the research that you did at ClearCover when you took the surveys, did it show any interesting spending habits of, let's say, a particular age group, like millennials or boomers, for instance?
It was interesting that we had so many millennials. The survey was not targeted at millennials, but they're the fastest growing population. So we did see a lot of answers coming from that group. But I think overall, when it comes to that kind of spending, really people are just looking to save money if they can. And so I don't know that we learned anything super profound in that category, but just that people want to feel like they're paying a fair price and that they're getting a good service for what they're spending.
Right, for sure. One thing that just kind of struck me as we're having this conversation here is as we look toward a future of, let's say, more automated driver experiences, right? Not just in terms of trucking for shipping across the country, but as we look at driverless cars as a potential for the future. How does car insurance, how would something like that factor in? Obviously, everything would have to evolve. Most industries will, but it's just interesting to look at, I think, like how would insurance work if a vehicle is automated?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one that I feel our CEO, Kyle, answers better than I will, so I will borrow from him. But he often talks about even when that switch happens, there's going to be a transition period. And so what we're actually looking at first is this idea of shared risk, because for a while, there will be, even if it's a driverless car, there's going to be some component of human interaction, the human who owns that car, to own some of the responsibility. And so I think for us, we just look forward to building a company that people can trust, that they believe in, that they can count on for good service. And as that shifting of sharing the risk happens over the course of probably a decade or so, it'll take some time.
Right.
We'll continue to be there for our customers. And then it's hard to predict what the future will look like. As soon as that comes where the transition is full, and will it ever happen that humans don't have some component of the risk even in a driverless car? And so I think what we care about most is building those relationships, establishing a strong bond of trust, because we believe that we can change this. We hope that one day we are as recognizable as larger insurance companies, but we hope it's for the way that we take care of our customers and the way we seek to understand them. And I think if we can do that, no matter when the transition happens to driverless cars, we're going to be in a good spot to be a company that people want to stay with or that people may want to shift to that hadn't tried us before.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's a perfectly legitimate attitude to take on that. And I would agree, there's certainly going to be a transitional period. And I've been thinking even if it does go en masse to driverless on the roads, there's still going to be a faction of people who want to do it, like drive, that is, as a luxury, maybe in like theme parks off of major interstates. And I think that would still require insurance in some regard, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I try and channel the 16-year-old me that was really excited to just get to be in a car alone, that feeling of independence. And I think that probably won't go away in you know, the human experience. So I think you're absolutely right that whether it becomes a novelty to be able to do that or it's something that people just choose to keep, it will likely be something that exists for a long time.
Agreed. Yeah, it's a car is the ultimate expression of autonomy, and that's totally not going to change anytime soon. Ariana, thanks again for joining us. I wanted to know if anyone wants to know more information about the survey that you conducted or what you guys found, where can they go?
If they go to clearcover.com, you can access our blog. We have an excellent blog post that breaks down some of the numbers and links to other relevant pieces of information that kind of give more context to the story as well. But we're excited to share this information with people and hope to get some more customers in Illinois.
Ariana Gibson, Head of Driver Insight at ClearCover, thank you very much for joining us on the Opening Bell this morning.
Thank you, Don.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN. Steve Grzanich off this morning. I'm Don Kleppen. Just a quick check of the Associated Bank Market Desk numbers real quick. The U.S. futures trending towards modest gains this morning. Dow Jones, NASDAQ, and S&P all in the green, trending that way anyway. European markets, the DAX looks good. That is up about 50 points. The CAC is also up near 30. The FTCE, though, is down just about the same amount, 30. Asian markets, especially the Nikkei, looking real good. It's up over 400 points right now. Shanghai and the Hang Seng are trending downward this morning. But checking the latest now on agriculture and commodities, here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning. There's a saying, forever in the world of sports, the game ain't over till the fat lady sings. But that saying might also apply to trade negotiations between China and the United States. Because now China wants to hold more talks this month to hammer out the details of the Phase 1 trade deal announced last week. Beijing may send a delegation led by Vice Premier Liu He, China's top negotiator, to finalize a written deal that could be signed by the presidents of China and the United States at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit next month in Chile. So apparently, we are still waiting for final details on that trade agreement that was announced last week in Washington. Turning to the market story, soybeans moved higher yesterday. Weather worries, and I don't know if you saw photos on Facebook of the blizzard in North Dakota, but it looked like a good old-fashioned blizzard that came down on that state. And at the end of the day yesterday, December wheat up 3 cents. Soybeans firmed after a hard freeze over the weekend, stretched farther into the Midwest than expected, and the corn ended the day at $3.97¾ a bushel, while the soybeans settled at $9.40½ a bushel. That's a quick look at what happened agriculturally. No harvest progress reports yesterday because of the Columbus Day holiday that said we'll wait till this afternoon to get those weekly harvest progress reports. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thank you, Orion. Very much appreciate that. One thing on the Opening Bell that I wanted to mention as well is that I've been looking into the last few weeks. I've been paying attention to the success of cannabis companies that have been supplying the Canadian marketplace since Canada overwhelmingly went legal last year. I just wanted to see what companies like Canopy Growth, Aurora Cannabis, Tilray, which of these were going to be, if any, were going to distinguish themselves and become successful as a provider as a major country went legal. And so far, the results have not been inspiring. Canopy Growth is kind of tanking from the beginning of the year. Aurora Cannabis, same thing. It seems every other week there's headlines which are more discouraging than they're, you know, looking positively to the future. And one of the things that seems to be a trend, it's not confirmed. I haven't seen any specific reporting on it. But one thing that I believe is harming the Canadian cannabis market, the legal marketplace, is the existence and continued surgence of the black market. There's illegal cannabis still being provided all throughout Canada, through every province. And that's whatever they do up there to sort of figure that out is one thing. But as we look toward January January 1st here in Illinois, and as more states in the U.S. continue the journey to legalization, I think that's something that is very worth keeping an eye on. In California, they've been able to be successful selling it legally for a few years already now, and that's because they had started cracking down on the black markets there years ago. However, those are still in existence, and that's definitely the case here in Illinois as well. And so one thing that I just wanted to mention to consumers looking forward, or and maybe investors, anybody who's interested in this new emerging industry, in order to make the legal market work, you have to, in this case, you have to get rid of the illegal marketplace. People have been using these sellers for years. They have relationships with them. Most of the time, it's easier to reach out to them. You know, some of these guys even deliver. And it's just, you have to get rid of that component if you want people to make the change over to legal. It's got to be as good, it's got to cost the same amount or less, and it's got to be easy to go to. And if that doesn't work, you ultimately have to remove the other option. That's really what it comes down to. The other thing we want to mention, outlook for today on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. This is Tuesday, October 15th. There's a number of Federal Reserve speakers out today, including James Bullard, Raphael Bostic, Esther George, and Mary Daly, along with a flurry of earnings from Johnson & Johnson, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, and Goldman Sachs. Just some of the things that could move the markets today, Tuesday, October 15th.